Here's a startling truth. Only 30% of women reliably orgasm from intercourse alone. If you're among the other 70%, you've probably wondered what's wrong with you. The answer? Absolutely nothing. For decades, science approached female sexuality as a slightly defective version of male sexuality, assuming women should experience spontaneous desire, that physical arousal should match mental interest, and that vaginal penetration should reliably produce orgasm. These assumptions weren't based on how women's bodies actually work. They were based on treating male sexuality as the default setting. This fundamental misunderstanding has left countless women feeling broken when they're actually completely normal. Understanding how your unique sexuality functions isn't about fixing yourself. It's about recognizing that you've been handed the wrong instruction manual. Cultural scripts act as maps of sexuality, often unreliable ones. When our actual experiences don't match these maps, we try to force our experiences to fit rather than updating our maps. When the map doesn't match the terrain, the map is wrong, not your body. Your clitoris is an iceberg. The visible tip is just a fraction. Beneath lie internal legs extending alongside the vaginal canal and bulbs near the vaginal opening, all packed with nearly double the nerve endings of a penis in a much smaller space. Unlike the multitasking penis, the clitoris has exactly one job: pleasure. This anatomy explains why most women don't orgasm from penetration alone. When 80-90% of women who masturbate do so with little or no vaginal penetration, they're responding to their actual anatomy rather than cultural scripts. The hymen has been equally misunderstood. Rather than a freshness seal, it's a flexible membrane that heals if torn, doesn't reliably indicate sexual activity, and rarely bleeds during first intercourse. Bleeding typically comes from insufficient lubrication. Medieval anatomists called women's genitals pudendum, meaning to make ashamed. Modern science reveals something more empowering. Male and female genitals develop from identical tissue, just organized differently. Understanding this transforms shame into curiosity. Your sexuality operates through two systems. The sexual excitation system, accelerator, responds to sexually relevant stimuli, while the sexual inhibition system, brakes, scans for threats. These work simultaneously but independently. Some people have sensitive accelerators with strong brakes, others have insensitive accelerators with light brakes. Men typically have more sensitive accelerators, women usually have more sensitive brakes, but variation among women is enormous. Ask 1,000 women how often they'd ideally like sex, and answers range from never to 5 times daily, all normal. The brake system has 2 types, one responding to immediate stimuli, foot brake, and another creating chronic inhibition, hand brake. Most sexual difficulties aren't broken accelerators, they're brakes that won't release. Common brake triggers include pregnancy stress, relationship conflicts, body image concerns, fatigue, and past trauma. Sometimes both systems activate simultaneously. Your accelerator responds to touch, while your brake worries about undone dishes. The good news, you can tune both systems, changing what your brake considers threatening and what your accelerator considers arousing. Identical sensations feel completely different depending on context. Tickling feels flirtatious when you're in a good mood, but irritating when you're annoyed. This isn't just psychological, it changes brain responses neurologically. Researchers implanted probes in rats' nucleus accumbens, a brain region determining approach or avoidance behaviors. In calm environments, stimulation produced approach behaviors. In stressful environments, the same stimulation produced avoidance. Context fundamentally rewires how your brain processes stimuli. Your emotional state creates powerful context through 3 interconnected systems: expecting, that's sexually relevant, enjoying, that's nice, and eagerness, go get more. The same touch that triggers eagerness for sex when you're relaxed might trigger eagerness to avoid sex when you're stressed. You can't force sexual response through willpower any more than you can force yourself to find Brussels sprouts delicious. You can create optimal conditions, reducing stress, increasing novelty, ensuring sufficient sleep, but ultimately, you must let your body respond naturally. One of the most misunderstood aspects of women's sexuality is arousal non-concordance, the disconnect between physical genital response and subjective feelings of arousal. Men show about 50% concordance, women show only about 10%. Your genitals are like a friend who notices every restaurant and says, "This is a restaurant," without preference, while your brain assesses context to decide if you actually want to eat there. Three dangerous misconceptions persist. First, treating male sexuality as the default. Second, interpreting women's genital responses as more honest than their reported feelings, the toxic, "you said no, but your body said yes" idea. Genital response merely indicates sexual relevance, not appeal or consent. Third, treating non-concordance as requiring pharmaceutical treatment. For women whose bodies don't always match their rinds, you're normal and healthy. Offer your partner alternative ways to recognize arousal, breath changes, muscle tension, and most importantly, your words. For more than half of women, stress decreases sexual interest as the brain prioritizes survival over pleasure. Stress disrupts menstrual cycles, reduces fertility, decreases genital response, and increases pain during sex. Unlike acute threats, modern stressors, work deadlines, relationship tensions, financial pressures, never truly end. The solution isn't eliminating stressors, it's completing the stress response cycle. Physical activity is the most efficient strategy, signaling to your body that you've escaped danger. Other effective methods include sleep, affection, meditation, crying, creative expression, and self-care rituals. Resolving the stressor isn't the same as dealing with stress. Your body still needs to complete the physiological cycle. Sexual trauma represents particularly devastating stress. When someone loses control over their body and freezes, trauma occurs. Recovery requires security and the ability to separate the freeze response from fear, allowing panic and rage to discharge through cognitive therapies, body-based approaches, or mindfulness practices. Resolving the stressor isn't the same as dealing with stress. Your body still needs to complete the physiological cycle. Sexual trauma represents particularly devastating stress. When someone loses control over their body and freezes, trauma occurs. Recovery requires security and the ability to separate the freeze response from fear, allowing panic and rage to discharge through cognitive therapies, body-based approaches, or mindfulness practices. Sexual desire isn't a biological drive, it's an incentive motivation system. Drives maintain survival baselines like hunger, pushing us from internal discomfort. Sex pulls us toward attractive external stimuli. About 75% of men and 15% of women experience spontaneous desire, wanting sex out of the blue. Others, 5% of men, 30% of women, have responsive desire, only wanting sex after sexy things begin happening. Responsive desire is completely normal and healthy. Treating sex as a drive pathologizes responsive desire, making healthy women feel broken. Hormones rarely cause low desire. The real culprits are stress, depression, anxiety, trauma, and attachment issues. Low desire is fundamentally a relationship issue defined by desire differential between partners. Research-based strategies include heart rate-raising activities that create arousal your brain associates with your partner, meaningful challenges that deepen commitment, and making concrete plans for connection. For couples trapped in destructive chasing dynamics, establishing a no-sex period followed by alternating initiation of sensual touch can help untangle sexual communication. Sexual well-being depends less on how your sexuality functions and more on how you feel about it. These meta-emotions, feelings about feelings, determine the difference between satisfaction and distress. Self-criticism activates your sexual brake, creating the same physiological state as being under attack. When insecure during sex, we focus on hiding perceived flaws rather than experiencing pleasure. Self-compassion offers an antidote. Treat yourself gently, view struggles as connecting rather than isolating, and remain non-judgmental about present experiences. Shifting your goal from orgasm to pleasure transforms sexual experience. This applies equally to desire. Letting go of spontaneous desire expectations and embracing responsive desire opens new possibilities. In a world that pathologizes normal variation, the most revolutionary act is accepting your body exactly as it is. Your sexuality isn't a performance to be perfected, it's a garden to be tended with patience and compassion.